This is from Acts 16:16 to 24. As we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a girl who had a spirit of divination. She and her oracles made a good living for her owners. She followed Paul and the rest of us. "These men are servants of God Most High," she would cry out. "They are declaring to you the way of salvation." She did this for many days. Eventually, Paul got fed up with it. He turned around and addressed the spirit. "I command you in the name of Jesus the Messiah," he said, "come out of her." And it came out then and there. When the girl's owners saw that their hope of profit had vanished, they seized Paul and Silas, dragged them into the public square before the authorities, and presented them to the magistrates. "These men," they said, "are throwing our city into an uproar. They are Jews, and they are teaching customs which it's illegal for us Romans to accept or practice." The crowd joined in the attack on them, and the magistrates had their clothes torn off them and gave orders for them to be beaten with rods. When they had thoroughly beaten them, they threw them into prison and gave orders to the jailer to guard them securely. With that instruction, he put them in the innermost part of the prison and fastened their feet in the stocks.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you today, and I'm going to be speaking to you not so much about what we do in Cambodia. While I've spoken at Missions Fest and whatnot, and we teach about what we're actually dealing with in Cambodia, this morning is very much a time of worship when we focus on God. So I will simply be using some of our experiences in Cambodia to illustrate, I think, some of the lessons we can learn from the Lord. The passage that was just read by Genevieve was an interesting passage in that it brings to the forefront a slave girl that had a problem, and her problem was spiritual, yes, but her problem from a community standpoint was that she had value. Not value before God that we think about spiritually, not that kind of value. Yes, she's obviously to die for before God. But the value that was the problem was her monetary value. She could make money for those who owned her. And that is a world that I very much live in. My background is in the RCMP. I was, my whole career was supposed to be that of a weapons specialist. The world's most useless skill set for Christian missions, just so you know. So if God can use me, he can use absolutely anybody. And my particular skill set, as you narrow it down, was actually in terms of forensic science and working with dead people. And I can extract all kinds of information from dead people. That's what I do. That's what I'm trained for. That's what I'm good at. And I can safely tell you, in 22 years of doing that job in the RCMP, I never had one client respond to the gospel. I was a complete failure. So again, why would God even choose to use me? But he did, simply because I was willing, and to my surprise, policing skills became vitally important. As I discovered, there was a whole country abused, a whole country of people that had been enslaved. Just like the girl that Paul and Silas encounter. Interestingly, when accusations are made by the slave girl's owners, they basically say, these two guys are creating an uproar in the city. They're not actually honest about the problem. The problem, the reason they're dragging Paul and Silas before the magistrates is because you have messed with my business. That's the real problem. And so the ministry we have become involved in Cambodia is messing with people's businesses. We mess with the business of human traffickers. We mess with the business of the Vietnamese mafia. This is not something you get into lightly. And yet, in this context, we find people thriving despite profound injustice. And a good illustration of how we're required to thrive in injustice is to be found in Jeremiah. I'll speak about that in a moment. But Let's think about our own lives for a minute. Do we kind of make do with life, our Christian life or otherwise? Do we kind of make do waiting for that day when we will be ready to serve the Lord, when everything kind of aligns, when things will come out right? Then we'll be ready. Not right now. We're kind of busy. We got issues. We got problems. Are we waiting for enough money? Perhaps the perfect career? Are we waiting for the right relationship? Or perhaps the restoration of a relationship? Are we waiting to find ourselves in the right location? Are we waiting? What are those things that we're waiting for before we say, okay, Lord, now I'm ready. I'm in. How are we putting the Lord on hold in our lives? I don't think God gives us the opportunity to put Him on hold in our lives. He requires that we serve us wherever we find ourselves, under whatever circumstances. And so in this context, let me just read to you a couple of verses from Jeremiah 29, verses 4 through 7. This is when the Israelites were in captivity in Babylon. It's hard to get much worse than their circumstances. And this is what the Lord has to say. Verse 4, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses, settle down, plant gardens, eat what they produce, marry, have sons and daughters, find wives for your sons, give your daughters in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city into which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. So this whole context is exile. It's devastating. And so I'm going to introduce you to a modern parallel. If we can bring up the first picture. This is the street of exile. This is one of the communities I've had the privilege of both running investigations and executing warrants. And also doing ministry in. This is a street of exile. It is on the outskirts of the capital city of Cambodia. It is a community where originally when we first encountered it, it took 55 armed police officers to get me on that street. It was an area that had seceded from the state and was run by the Vietnamese mafia. And that community had only one product to sell, and that was the lives of children to pedophiles. There's a couple of kids here, so I'm not going to get into detail. I don't have to. You'll be able to figure out what topic we're on as we discuss this morning. And so this is a street of exile. People have been trafficked in against their will to be abused en masse by predators from all over the world. It is absolutely horrendous. It is an environment that when I first brought hardened and seasoned Canadian police investigators, they wept. Non-Christian, tough guys, they wept. They had never seen anything like this kind of industrial abuse. So this is the street of exile. It's hard to get much worse than this environment. Next picture. Thanks. When you're in an environment like that, you get to work with all kinds of people that you would sooner not work with. This is an example of one, and just this reminds me, for those of you who have cell phones on you, please don't take any pictures of what's on screen. Some of these pictures are sensitive. This particular woman would show up when we eventually moved into this community and started work, a very dicey thing to do under the noses of the Vietnamese mafia. One of the things that we were participating in was a medical clinic, and all could come for free and receive medical attention. That's those who are sold, who are slaves to be abused, those who transport and traffic, those who run the service industries to support this, and also the criminals, mafia guys themselves. So needless to say, we saw some very interesting machete injuries, beating injuries. Like, it's a violent, violent place. One of my friends, there was a couple that worked with us, and they decided to move from Sacramento, California, and they moved into this community. Location. This is not where you want to move. And I asked her, after about 3 months them having lived there, we got them a secure facility, built them a secure facility on top of a building, actually, that they could live in that community. And I said, so how are things going? She says, it's pretty good. I've kind of got used to the screaming at night. But you said it's the morning you realize why we can't go out at night, because not infrequently we see the brains on the sidewalk. That's real. That's real. What a mission field. And so you get to work with people like this. This woman would come to the clinic. Everybody gets help for free. We're Christians. We want to be a blessing to people. So she would come in and she would require medication. She and many others would require medication, clearly in quantities not for herself. Antibiotics, whatever. And from the number of quantities of medication she wanted, it was fairly clear she was running slaves. we didn't know how many girls she was running. They were ill and they needed help and she wanted medication. So this is where you instantly get into the gray area of working in an environment like this. Okay, so we can say, no, you're a mama san. You are running slaves. You're an abuser. You're tormenting people. So no, we're not going to support you. How can we support you? Because if we give medication to you, the girls will be more healthy. If the girls are more healthy, they will be abused even more, and you make more money. How do we participate in that? On the other hand, if we don't give you the medication, the girls might die. What do we do in this situation? And so even though the medicine was free for absolutely everybody coming to that clinic, no matter who they were, we made an exemption for those who ran the brothels and those who ran slaves. They had to pay for the medication. But being good Christians, they didn't pay in money. They had to pay in prayer. And so each one of these women that would come, this one being one, would sit and say, okay, you can have the medication, but the deal is you can have the medication only if you sit still and we will lay hands on you and we will pray for you. Now, have any of you ever heard the expression putting salt on a slug? It's an old Irish expression. I don't know if they use it here. When somebody just completely squirms, this woman would have much sooner paid cash. It was absolutely torturous for her to be prayed for. It was absolutely brutal and expensive for her to get the medication. And yet we ministered to her even through that. Next picture. Tragically, that community has pedophiles flying from all over the world. I have pictures of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them that we've surveilled. Japan, America, New Zealand, Germany, Britain, Canada, to be more specific. Vancouver, Burnaby, Abbotsford, White Rock. I've investigated so many of them. And they go to abuse not just young adults, they go to abuse children, very young children. So this is a loathsome environment controlled by the mafia. Next picture. And then you have the victims. You have those that are sold. Absolutely brutal. Absolutely heartbreaking. And in this environment of exploitation, every bit as brutal as what's being described in Paul and Silas' encounter. Children and young women absolutely used, owned by others for the profit of others and the destruction of others. This is the environment we're called to. This is the environment of exile. This is the environment that any sane person runs from. But what does God illustrate for us in verse 5? In exile, when tormented, we're told to build. Next picture. So let's look at our version of this industry. It's a massive growing industry. It's an industry where you see young women like this everywhere. They are from the villages. They have come down to the big city to try and earn some money to help their poverty-stricken parents. And it's normalized. It happens everywhere. Her sign reads, if you can't read it, sleep with me, free breakfast. It's like something you'd see at a gas station, completely objectified. This young woman is a product. And yet even though it's normalized, look what she is doing with that sign. She's hiding behind it. Because she is absolutely made in the image of God, whether she knows it or not. And she knows this is not right, and she is shamed, even though it's normalized by that society. And so there is the foundation by which we can start to work, because she is human. She is loved by God. Next picture. So to deal with all these individuals, we need to build. So this was one of my crime scenes, a brutal, brutal environment. Children died in there. I investigated and prosecuted several files from this building. And we figured the best defense in a community such as this is an offense. And so we went to the local mafia and we rented this building. And this was a place where we set up basically a kids' club. We started working with the children of that community who were being sold at night. Next picture. As that initiative grew, we were basically running a vacation Bible school. How many of you are familiar with vacation Bible school? You know what that is? Yeah, quickest way to a migraine? Yeah. In that environment, these kids were just wild. They'd never been to school. They were wild, they were abused at night, and they were injured during the day, and they were actually trained to steal everything. So try imagine running a vacation Bible school where every kid there has been trained to steal everything you own. It's quite fascinating and very difficult. But as that kids club grew, the mafia, as God would plan it, came to us, and they said, you know, we've built this big building. It's the red one there, closest to the camera. And it's the biggest building in the community. And we've built this, and it's a child abuse hotel. And it's full service, so you can move into the hotel, and you get your room service in order, the number of children, the genders, whatever you want, and it's all part of the business. And so we've actually designed this building for this purpose. However, because of your work, and because of the work of some others, we were having some influence on the Cambodian police at the time, who were starting to maybe just care about this. They said, we kind of don't want this building anymore. We haven't finished it yet, but we'd like to sell it, and you're our preferred customer. Would you like to buy it? We're the enemy, and God has a sense of humor. And so I very much hope I'm the first RCMP member who did a real estate deal with the mafia and bought a brothel. But that's exactly what we did. And we bought this building. Next picture. Now, it was rough inside. Hadn't been finished inside at all. And that, you would think, would be a disadvantage, but not in that community. Because it became very clear as we walked around that building that nothing made sense in terms of the structures of that building for a child abuse hotel. Everything made sense for a clinic and a church, and a school. Like, it was just pre-designed for us, but it wasn't finished. Why would God give us something unfinished looking like that? Structurally all there, but not finished. Well, it became very, very clear, very, very quickly, God wanted to give us a virgin building in that community. That's a very good and apt term in that community, because the kids have memories of all those buildings. They've been brought to all those buildings in that community. They've been abused everywhere. This building was pure. There was no corporate community memory of abuse in that building, and this is what God gave us. Further to that, this was on the main street of the community, and it was the biggest building in the community. Now, we had spent quite some time praying over this community, and we, of little faith, had been praying, Lord, would you just visit this community? This is a torturous, pretty hellish place. Would you just visit this? Would you just visit this community with us? And when we walked around this building, I can honestly tell you, just before we bought it, when we were looking at buying it, I did not feel this rush of excitement that we have the opportunity to get the biggest building in the community on the main street. I felt condemnation. I felt absolute condemnation from God. And others with me felt the same thing. We weren't talking about it, but we all felt it. God was irritated at us because for 3 years we had been praying, Jesus, would you please visit this community? And Jesus was saying, how dare you pray so small? I have no intention of visiting this community. I am moving into this community, and I am taking the biggest building on the main street, and I will transform this place. What is this visit stuff you pray about? You think you're on the cutting edge? You're not on the cutting edge. Follow me, and I will take you to the cutting edge. And so God gave us this marvelous building, next picture, which today still serves 500 people a day. Go through that building. And so this is how we have learned to build under circumstances that are exile for some and torment for many others. Next picture. Now, the next verse we have to deal with is our sort of the end of verse 5. It talks about planting gardens too. So this is our version. This is right out back of the building. And this was this empty lot that was just garbage all lying there and grass. And it's funny when you get involved in missions, a lot of things become really interesting and really special for you. And I really wanted to buy this lot because we wanted to expand mission and have a safe place for kids to play, the only safe place in the community. And but as I looked at it one day, I remember watching a dog run across it. And then when the dog ran across the grass there, the whole thing went blub, 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 blub. And I realized, oh, This is about 4 to 5 feet deep liquid sewage. Everything from that community goes in there, and those are floating weeds and floating garbage on top. And so I became really determined. Remember, location, location, location? I want to buy a quarter acre of liquid sewage. Yay! God makes the strangest things exciting, but I really wanted. This was kind of the center of the community, and how symbolic was it? And so we made arrangements, and we bought that mess, and we pumped it out. And interestingly, just as an illustration, I think, that God gave us, when we pumped it out, all the snakes went into the houses. And I had to deal with a lot of very angry mafia people who now have got snakes in their houses. It was supposed to be a good PR exercise. It wasn't. But anyway, this is our version of plant gardens. So not really a garden as is described in the passage. It also says, eat what they produce. Well, we haven't quite got there yet. The next picture. But what we do have is fulfillment. This is the same lot taken from the top of our building, and this is a Christmas celebration. And this is where we invite in all the mafia, all the mama-san, all the slaves, all the creation that is around us there. It's just horrendous. And the girls do beautiful traditional dancing, and they tell the Christmas story of Christ who comes to rescue those enslaved. That's what we now do where there was once slop. And so that's our version of plant gardens. Next picture. Mary. So many of the young people became Christians. These are young people that come from absolutely horrendous backgrounds. And they became Christians, and they started to learn their theology, and they became youth leaders. And they are out there living it in an incredible way. And so it's very natural that as they love the Lord and they serve the Lord in that community, they would start to pair up. Next picture. And so in that building, we have marriages. This is the place that took 55 armed officers to get me on that street. Now there are Christian weddings of Christian young people that serve that community. What an amazing thing as we live verse 6, to marry and give in marriage. Next picture. And we're told to increase. Well, we can increase the normal way by young couples having babies and Christian families growing and the community grows. We also have many other creative ways of growing in Cambodia. This one is one where a pastor who's sitting closest to the camera there, he is signing papers with a relief worker for a baby that was abandoned and found on the street in that community. And so he and many others in the community have adopted these throwaway children. They're not throwaway children. They are absolutely loved of God. Absolutely precious, and he has found them, even in that environment, a Christian home. Next picture. So little guys like this grow up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord in that community. And so, yes, as per verse 6, we marry and we increase. Verse 7 is a little more challenging, though. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city. Next picture. Okay. What city? Is this the city that you want to belong to? Is this the city you're kind of going, one day I'm going to retire there? Is this the place you want to retreat to? Is this where you go holidays? Is this any kind of a city you want to be in? Is this the city of desire for you? No. In the context of verse 7, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which you have been carried into exile, the worst place you want to be. That is where you are called to pray for the prosperity, because if you prosper, it will prosper. And so we've had to work with these guys, and we have a relationship with very, very dangerous people, and we minister to them. And we have had one trafficker who used to traffic children who now teaches Sunday school. Now, he's never left alone with children, but he teaches Sunday school. You work with what you've got, and God has honored tremendous ministry in that community. By working with guys you don't want to work with and praying for their prosperity, not through their business, but for their spiritual prosperity, that they would one day grab a hold of riches that they do not know anything about now. The process by which we do that is prayer. Next picture. There is plenty of corporate prayer. Plenty of prayer to the Lord who said he would come and he would stay in that place. And so as we pray, we see a community transformed. There is individual prayer and there's corporate prayer. Next picture. The individual prayer is quite startling. I could do a whole hour just on some of these children. This particular one, very popular with the pedophiles, tragically. Many of these children have been assaulted thousands of times, just so you know. It's over the top. They are psychologically, spiritually, physically destroyed in so many ways. But God does not leave them there. He is the great physician. That is who we serve. And I once asked this one and another little girl, I said, I used delicate terms. I said, where is God? Where is Jesus when people are doing bad things to you? And both of them looked at me like I was absolutely nuts. And they said, well actually, he's with me in the rape cubicle. He holds my hand. He's always with me. Like, what a sort of stupid question. That the impact and the tragedy of her and their lives is not changed at all by their circumstances in terms of their knowledge of God. Now, if you're like me, you're nowhere near as spiritually mature as this kid. It was shaming to me because I'm wondering where God is when my MasterCard bill comes in, right? When the job's going well and the kids are doing fine and everything's stable, you kind of go, oh, all's well with me. The Lord's happy with me. I'm where I'm supposed to be before the Lord. But what happens when the wheels come off and you lose your job and relationships fall apart and the kids go sideways and health issues like Joanne talked about this morning just like devastate you? Where is God in that? And we kind of adhere to this subtle, it's not true prosperity gospel, but we do adhere to this subtle prosperity gospel because we are apt to ask the question when everything goes wrong, where's God now? These kids are way beyond that. Way beyond that. They know that no matter what is done to them, no matter what experiences they have in life, it doesn't change the quality of relationship they have with the Lord. He is theirs and they are his, period. No matter what happens. And as such, they shame me and challenge me. And so through all of this prayer and all of these individuals, we see lives prosper. Next picture. Those of you who are familiar with Asia, you can always spot the center of a community in Asia. You go for where the food hawkers are. Well, the food hawkers are right outside this building now. That's the center of the community. A very, very dangerous community. In that building, next picture, there is a vibrant church of suffering people. Next picture. The gospel is proclaimed every week. It was proclaimed today. Solid biblical teaching. Next picture. There is music that wafts out of the windows down that street, the street of abuse and exile. Next picture. Children go and are taught their ABCs and are cared for. Sometimes while still being abused, sometimes after they've been rescued and rehabilitated. Next picture. And they learn more than ABCs. They learn about their Lord. They learn that they are, I love the expression in that context, they learn they are to die for. If they know they are to die for, they can deal with just about anything. If we know we are to die for, we can deal with just about anything. But we so often don't live that way. Next picture. And so in that context, we have a wonderful youth team that I've had the privilege of spending time with. And these young people are strong, mature, incredibly brave. Next picture. And to go down to the beach and watch them being baptized. I tell you, next picture. This is a youth leadership group that any church in North America would be proud to have. There was one occasion where the mafia had decided they were going to kill Pastor Chanta and because he had intervened too many times in their business. But they're quite matter of fact. They'll say, you know, Tuesday morning, we're going to show up and kill you. You know, they just tell them, we're coming. The response of the youth leadership team was to gather around him, sit on the ground around him, and wait for the mafia to come with the knives and the baseball bats and the guns. And they said, if they're going to kill Pastor, they have to kill us first to get to him. How many youth groups do you know in North America would do that for their pastor? And yet we think we're the great North American church in the mission field. We have to teach them. They're so immature in terms of their faith. Well, wait a minute here. This youth group, these youth leaders, are way ahead of any youth group I know in Canada because their life depends on the Lord. And so they thrive in this context more than we thrive in Vancouver. Next picture. And so, little ones that started off absolutely devastated, with no hope whatsoever, and wondering in a Buddhist context, what did I do in a previous life to deserve this? I've just got to deal with it until I die, and hopefully I'll come back as something better. Now have discovered the revolutionary teaching that they are loved by a God that transforms in this life. It is powerful and it is a beautiful thing. And so in this context of exile, of trauma, of dislocation, we find people thriving. This is where Christ is. He's in the environment where it gets bad. This is where we find him. Next picture. We're currently dealing with a whole new exile now of the older girls coming in for factory jobs. 700,000 girls are on the move in Cambodia for jobs. Highly, highly vulnerable, depressed, abused, with jobs with no income, highly, highly vulnerable. And so here we go one more time with girls just like Paul and Silas met, who they're owned, they belong to others. And yet Christ is the one. What was the response of the girl when the Spirit was rebuked in her? Was that Paul and Silas's power? No, it was the power of God, and the Spirit left her. We rely on the very same God in cleansing the lives of young women in Cambodia. And so deliberately, I did not read to you a verse just a few down, 11, in this passage, because I wanted to save it up, because we've domesticated this verse completely in our society, tragically. But think of this community, think of exile, think of torment, think of destruction, all of that in that context for your life, for theirs, and for the lives of the Israelites many, many years ago. We have this verse. For, this is written in the context of exile. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. This is not a Hallmark verse. This is a verse in the context of torment and exile and loss. And that is the plans God has for them. That is the plans God has for us. Next picture. So as you listen to me and you listen to this and you look at this building, do you believe God can transform a community through a church like this? Do you think this church can thrive? Do you trust me that they are absolutely living their faith out there? Do you think there's joy there? Yes, in the context of torment and scars, yes, but there's joy, there's hope. All of that exists. So do you believe me in that? Okay. Next picture. If it can happen there, let's talk about here. If God can transform a community with those kind of ills, if God can use children that are not properly theologically educated and are just learning about him to transform those around him, if adults can be absolutely transformed from criminal behavior into serving children and serving the Lord, if God can do that kind of transformation, do you actually think that he can, maybe, just possibly, work with the issues of your life? You think he's good for it? Do you think that God can use this community, this Christian community, this church community, to transform the larger community here? Is he capable of it? Absolutely. How then should we be living? Do we trust him for this? Do we trust him to give him the garbage of our lives? If God can redeem and restore young children and young women assaulted thousands of times, many times being sold by their parents, what does that do to the self-esteem? I can't even imagine. If he can restore and make them powerful young women, if he can take criminals and transform them into those that serve, then he is a God that says, follow me, come with me, I can transform you. And so my challenge to you today is not only to pray for those who suffer, that they will thrive for the Lord in the context they are found, but also my prayer for you is that you too would thrive in the imperfection of your lives. Do not wait until everything is aligned and you've got the right money and you've got the right job and your kids are doing well and everything's sorted out. Do not wait for that. That is not when God calls you to work for him. He calls you to work for him today, and you bring him your imperfections. You bring him your struggles. You bring him your sins and your brokenness. And you will never, ever encounter a circumstance where Jesus will say, I really love you, but but wait a minute, that circumstance in your life, I'm sorry, that's a little over the top, can't go there. You will never provide information to the Lord where he will say, I'm sorry, I'm shocked. Never encountered that before. I'm overwhelmed. I don't know how to deal with that. You cannot overwhelm Christ. You cannot shock him. You cannot create any circumstance that he's not saying, I'm good for that. Got it covered. That's the Lord we serve. And so in that context, in our own exiles, whatever they be in our heads, in our communities, the circumstances of your life, that is not right, where you struggle, give those to the Lord, invite him in, and please, please, please trust him to thrive. Thank you.